Marty in the Morning on RTE Lyric FM with Spry Finance. Keep living the life you love.
Now, I'm here in Studio 8 and very pleased to be in the company of the great Fiacre Trench. Fiacre, may I say how fabulous you look?
Thank you.
And
thank
how beautifully turned out you are.
Thank you, thank you.
Not at all.
The visit to the hairdresser was well worthwhile.
No, I should have gone myself. Yeah. I should have got a trim. I'm just happy to need a trim, quite frankly, at this stage of my life. It's lovely to have you with us, particularly to have you sitting by a piano, which might mean work, but there we are. That's
I'll tell you why I'm sitting at a piano.
Yes, sir.
Why I asked if I could.
Yeah.
I went to see Jimmy Webb. It was an interview, John Kelly interviewing Jimmy Webb. Was that in the U.S. Embassy? I can't imagine why we were in the U.S. ambassador's house. Anyway, that's what it was, right. A small audience.
Yeah.
And Webb was sitting at the piano, and he said, "This is my office," he said. And every now and then, John would ask him a question, and he'd go, "Well, I don't know, really." You know, it was a sort of like, it was a sort of security thing or something.
Yes, and it worked. Well, we went to see him in Dunleary. We've seen him a bunch of times.
Yeah.
There's a songwriter.
I think he's the only person who has won a Grammy for producer, for composer, for arranger. Whether he did all three in the same year, I'm not sure.
Well, he was very young, wasn't he, when he kicked off
MacArthur's Park
yeah. and all that carry on. And like you and I would both be fans of people like Jimmy Webb. And yet, you know, when I think about it, in terms of composing, I know you've composed, and we want to talk about some of that in a second, but you've worked with so many people over the years. When you started out, you were a science boffin, You were a clever boy in Trinity, weren't you?
I don't know about clever, but
wait,
yes.
Wait, you were in Trinity, so that was but that was going to be your thing, was it? That was going to be your future.
In parallel, I was also going to the Academy of Music, and I was studying composition with Archie Potter and organ with George Hewson. Those things were running in parallel, and really by year three, my head was more in liberal arts than it was in science, but I was advised to finish the science degree, which I did, and managed to get into graduate school of music on the basis of a bachelor.
Isn't that fantastic?
Of science, yeah.
And you never returned to it, of course.
I don't know anything about chemistry.
Good man.
I throw in the garden.
Yeah. Are you a doctor then? Dr. Trench, right?
No.
Professor Trench?
No.
Not even the professor?
No. The highest I can say is I have an honorary licentiate of the Royal Irish Academy of Music.
That'll do.
Yeah.
That'll do. You'll have a roundabout named after you yet. Don't I wouldn't worry about it. But you moved to the UK, and for many years you applied your trade in the UK. So the first thing I want to ask you about is I was astonished to see when I was going through the list, because I know, I see your name. I know, you know, quite often I know the sound that you create when I hear it on music of Van Morrison or a whole bunch of other people. But way back, there is a song which I loved on an album by Thin Lizzy. A Song for While I'm Away.
Oh, that's a gorgeous song.
Yeah. It is a beautiful song, because I think people forget the fact that Phil Lynott, also a man who could write music and words, was a very sensitive soul.
Absolutely.
Behind all the rock stuff.
Yeah.
But you arranged A Song for While I'm Away.
I did, yeah. That was shortly after they had the hit with Whiskey in the Jar.
Yeah. So this is, we're talking 70-something, early
70s. 73, I think.
Yeah.
And I think shortly after that, I did a brass arrangement on a song called Little Darling, and the 45, the single, it had bass arrangement F Trench, and I thought, if there's one thing Philip Lynott does not need, it's a bass arrangement.
That's very true.
But they forgot the brass.
But you, so you arranged that song for, was he, what was he like to work with? I met him once briefly, and it was a hello, and I never met him really properly.
I didn't meet him then. As far as I remember, only Brian Downey came to that session. It was quite some years in before I met Phil.
Yeah.
And then I saw him quite a lot when we did his two solo albums. Yeah.
Did you play it on the solo album?
No.
You just arranged
Yes.
Old Town, which of course is a great thing.
There's an amazing piano solo. You know that on the
Yes.
And, Darren Wharton, I think his name was.
Darren Wharton.
Darren, thank you. Wharton. And I remember the string players, when we were doing the strings, saying, did he do that all in one? Because it's fiendish, you know. Well, even if he did it in two passes, still fiendish. However, the track, as I put the strings on, was in C major, and so that's all white notes for the run. But it wasn't quite fast enough. So after we'd done the strings, we'd done the brass, they put it up to D flat. Now, that what Darren Wharton played in C was hard enough. There was no way anybody could have done it in D flat, because then you're whites and black notes.
Of course. And I thought you were going to play it there for a moment.
I can play the first two notes.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good.
Oh, sorry.
That was it's funny, isn't it? I brought the album with me today,
mm-hmm.
Which is, it's an amazing work. Actually, it's signed by Huey Lewis, of all people.
Oh, wow.
Because he was on it. Huey Lewis was on it. He plays a harmonica, I think,
that's
on one or two of the tracks.
Yeah.
Phil, you got on obviously well with them, because Old Town then was such an amazing piece of work.
He's a lovely man. He's a really lovely man.
Yeah.
The old Covent Garden. I remember only too well. The girl's a fool, she broke the rules, she heard a lie. This time he will break down. She's lost his trust, and so she bust all his lost. The system has broken down. Romance has broken down. This boy is cracking up. This boy has broken down. She plays it hard, she plays it tough. That's enough, the love is over. She's broke his heart and that is rough. But in the end it's a recover. It's not the same, honey, when you're not around. I've been spending my time in the old town. I sure miss you, honey, now you're not around.
that you're not around this old town.
For an arranger, that the person that you have a link with the person aside from the music, that there's a thing, or does that make any odds at all?
Well, if I have to warm to the song to work on it, and a few times, but only a few times, I've actually said no, I don't get it, I don't see this. A lot of the time, the artist hasn't necessarily been in the studio. I'm working with a producer. It's the producer who's engaged me, you know. But yes, I mean.
But it means that it also means that you're trusted to create what somebody has heard in their head.
Well, so a person who has shown extraordinary trust is Van.
Yes.
Because he hardly ever has been there when I was recording the strings. And there were some albums where he just sent me rough mixes and said, for me to choose which ones I might put strings or brass or whatever on, you know. So that was, you know, that really was trust. He never says much, but I gather that in an interview he said he found me empathetic. You know?
Yes, yeah. No, he was high praise indeed.
Yeah.
But that's funny that, so he leaves the songs and says, and trusts you to create. But stuff that you've done with Van is just,
My first encounter, I got this call to go to, he had a flat in Notting Hill, and he just sits me down and he puts on this cassette. And I'm listening to these tracks, you know, rough mixes of rhythm tracks and him, obviously him singing. And a few tracks in, I said, Van, what am I doing here? He said, well, you do strings, don't you? You know, I said, oh, right. So I put on a different hat then.
Really? So he wanted you to hear what he was doing and therefore in your head create what would come later.
Yeah.
Well, even before we get to, because I really want to talk to you about Van, I found an album of yours called Pastoral. It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Where has it been? This dates back to 1992. You had one before it, I think.
Three before it.
Okay, yeah. I found one, Classical Concepts. I found that on it.
Essentially Classics.
Yeah, okay.
There were three volumes of those.
Well, the Pastoral has a track on it called This Land. And I was completely blown away when I found it.
Thank you.
I've never seen the album.
But it's because it's a library album.
Yeah.
It's production music.
But it doesn't. It's
music for hire.
But it could be played today on the radio and would not be out of place.
Well, please do.
Thank you. Have you got a copy? Because I don't have a copy. Where is it possible to buy it anymore? I didn't see it as something available.
No, although I occasionally see a track from that, any of those albums is being played on Spotify.
So, well, that's exactly where I found it.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay. I was researching stuff, and then I found it. It's astoundingly gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
But that's what it is. It's library music. Therefore, somebody can use it for whatever, a background. If we were doing a walk in Donegal, where I believe you were recently, we could have This Land playing in the background, and you'd get a few extra bob for that then, would you?
It's a little incongruous, though, because This Land is kind of English string writing.
But you can claim it.
You know. It's sort of Vaughan Williams.
Yeah.
Archie Potter said to me, he said, if you're writing strings, it's very hard not to go there, you know, that Vaughan Williams thing. You know.
But it's a beautiful thing, so why not?
Yeah.
I have to play it because it's such a marvellous piece of music. Thank you. The other album I found at home is the Boomtown Rats.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another classic that you have had an involvement with. And this is The Fine Art of Surfacing, which is the Boomtown Rats album, on which there is a little-known track called I Don't Like Mondays.
No,
it's a small thing. And you were the man responsible for getting into the arranging department in there.
We had a very interesting string lineup for that, because normally it's kind of an inverted pyramid. You have, we'll say, eight first violins, six second. This is the concert orchestra, for instance.
Yes.
Eight first violins, six second violins, four violas, four cellos, two basses. We had five cellos and maybe three basses, because we wanted a more grunt, shall we say. wanted more on the bottom end.
But this, working with these guys who would trust you. Did you have a relationship with them, with Bob?
No, not Bob, the producer and the engineer. And we actually talked quite at length about what the role.
Because it's role very, when you hear I Don't Like Mondays now, it's a very big sound that was created.
Yeah. I nearly wrote it in the wrong key. Because
you're telling us now.
Because my pitch, I used to have reasonably good pitch recognition, and I nearly, which would have been disastrous. It's the black keys, whatever.
Today is how to die. And then the bullhorn crackles and the captain tackles with the problems in the house and wife. And he can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons. What reason do you need to die, die, oh, oh. And the silicon chip inside a head gets switched to overload. Oh, and nobody's gonna go school today, she's gonna make them stay at home, and daddy doesn't understand it, he always said she was good as gold, and he can see no reasons, cause there are no reasons, why reason do you need to be sure, tell me why, I don't like Mondays,
tell me why,
I don't like Mondays,
tell me why,
I don't like down.
But again, we're talking about a record that has become a classic, just like Old Town for Phil Lynott. These, and then I sometimes wonder, because your lady wife, Carmel, who I've met, and again, you've worked with, obviously, I don't know how she lets you near her, but anyway, she does. But
excuse you've just me, been 50 years, if you don't mind.
50 years?
Yes. As somebody said to me, you get less for murder.
You wrote a piece of music called For Carmel. For Carmel?
I did, yes.
For Carmel.
Be careful how you say that.
Well, it was For Carmel, different.
Yes.
Yeah. Back in the day.
Yeah, well.
What a lovely thing to be able to do.
Well, for 5 years, I was arranging from 1970 without any keyboard. I didn't have a keyboard. So I'd have a reel-to-reel tape recorder, and I'm just listening with the headphones.
Sure.
And I'm writing. It's all in there. And I don't actually hear what the strings or whatever it is are going to do until I'm actually in the studio. Mm. And then 75, I got my first piano, and it actually slowed me down because I started trying out, actually seeing, which is wrong because this is a percussion instrument. The strings don't do that. They do this sort of lovely balloon shape, whatever. Anyway, as an exercise, I wrote a tune a day for a while, and one of them was I wrote for Carmel, and it's I'll try and remember how it goes.
Where's your we talk about the strings and talking about it being very English. Where does your inspiration come from? Where do you go back to musically when you're coming up with something? I mean, okay, with all due respect, you wrote that piece. You called it For Carmel. You wrote it for Carmel, and I suspect there's a lot of love in that piece of music. Particularly, you wouldn't call it that if it didn't. But when it comes to you and your head, and the music that you grew up with and the music that influenced you, who were they or what was that sort of music?
Gosh.
Because I mean, you're trained. You're like you're, you know.
Yeah.
So who would it be? What would be the music that would hit you?
There's a lot of classical influences.
Yes.
My parents had those 12-inch.
78s.
Then you stack them up on the auto player.
Right.
And so I can remember they had Beethoven's Symphony No. 3, Eroica. They had Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, and so on. And actually, I got so used to because the maximum you could have on one of those was three and a half minutes. So there would be a fade out, and then the next one would fade up again. And I got so used to the gaps the fade outs. The first time I heard a complete performance of Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, it was the RE, as it was then, the RE Symphony Orchestra. Doing the school's concerts, and I was in school in Waterford.
Isn't that funny?
And they didn't stop. They just kept. They just played.
Tear
played straight through. No fade out. No fade up. You know.
That's hilarious.
But so those would be in. Those would be influences. The classical thing. But my parents' record collection was very eclectic. I mean, they had what were the hits when they got married in 1940, and there would be some Irish tunes, The Real Old Mountain Dew and The Cow That Ate the Piper. or was it The Piper That... No, it was. Anyway, where were we?
I have no idea. The good thing is that neither of us know where we are, and I always think, it was Studio 8 and RTE. Now, listen, I found this at home, but I didn't find it. I went looking for it. This is my original 1987 Fairy Tale of New York from the Pogues.
Oh, yeah.
On vinyl. Do you remember that?
Miniature Gatefold.
Yeah, Miniature Gatefold. Exactly. And you got the mention on the even on the cover. You got the mention.
Yes. So that's. And I'm glad to see it's a co-credit with James Farnley, because James didn't necessarily write any of the string parts, but he certainly had a lot of input.
A lot of input.
They'd been listening to Morricone for Once Upon a Time in America.
Go away.
A great deal when they asked me to come in.
Are you serious?
They gave me that as a reference.
Yeah. But, and had you been familiar with the Morricone soundtrack?
Not particularly that one. No. But this is very cheeky, but listen.
No.
You'll recognise. Deborah's theme.
The piece of music that I have said repeatedly will take me out of the church.
Oh.
My favourite piece of music ever. Isn't this mad? It is seriously my favourite piece of music ever.
Yeah.
That's astonishing me now. I never heard that. Isn't that funny?
It was Christmas Eve, babe. In the drunk tank, an old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
Queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drums they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, "Go away, babe." And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
You see the way this is lining up in terms of your work. Like, when you tick some boxes here, it's quite something, you know, no matter what way you look at it, Fiacre, it's the moments where you bring what you bring to each of these pieces of music, very substantial. And it's interesting for me that you can change how a song would be if you weren't there. So you must be, I don't want to say pride, but you must be very proud of the moments that you brought to a lot of these very, what I would call very important pieces of work over the years. Because you did change them, you know?
Yes. I don't know if I have it still, but I used to have the backing, the rough rhythm and vocal track for Have I Told You Lately? And I liked to play that cassette, that rough mix, because I could say everything I did with the strings is already in the track. Do you know what I mean? My approach is not to do the sort of very pop thing, which is that it used to be, you know, where you've got elaborate counter melodies and sort of things, and maybe drawing attention to itself. My wish is to make it sound organic, as if the string players were in the studio at the same time,
yes, I understand,
as the rhythm section and so forth.
Yeah,
if I've achieved that, then I'm happy.
Yeah, you know, that it doesn't take over, but it greatly enhances what's there already, if you will. You know. When you think about all these pieces of music, we were talking on the radio recently, we were playing Manana Heron, and which is a Rita. And we were playing there's the version from the soundtrack of Barry Lyndon, which is the Chieftains. Then there's the Christians, that great band from the UK, who did an amazing take using the music underneath it. But you worked with Kate Bush.
I did.
On Manana Heron. And she sang, obviously, in Irish, like a girl who came from Galway. It was perfection. It sounded perfect.
And Gaelic Gores were absolutely amazed, because she does not speak it.
Yes.
She learnt it phonetically. And superb.
Were you with her when
not,
she was...
Not when she was doing the record. But no. We did the strings just down the road there in Radio Studio 1.
Did you really?
Yeah.
With the orchestra,
With the members of the concert orchestra.
The concert orchestra.
And I'll tell you an interesting thing. At the time, the control room was not available commercially, shall we say. We just had the box. And so that Brian Masterson, I'm sure you know.
Yes, Brian, of course, the great Brian Masterson.
Big ears, we call him.
kindly.
That's a very kind thing. It's nothing to do with Noddy.
It's actually a compliment.
So he had to set up in the room itself. you know, so we had, you know, near field monitors or whatever, or headphones. So each playback was heard not only by Donald, Lunny, the producer, myself, or whatever, but the entire orchestra, the string orchestra, could hear it. And that's rare for them. I mean, for them, most of it, you're playing, you've got a set of headphones, you're playing to an existing rhythm and vocal track.
Yeah.
But you don't hear the marriage, you know.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're a string player, you have to have one off anyway to hear yourself properly acoustically.
Okay.
And so that was, I think it gave them more of an involvement than they usually would have, and it was all for the better, you know.
Well, it's very warm. Yes. That take on Non-Air.
Yeah.
It's quite beautiful. You must be proud of that one too, because that's one to tick a box now, fairly lively.
We left when all was said and done. We left, and should we go to an Indian restaurant? Yes. Okay. So, Kate Bush and her husband, and Donald and myself, standing out there, and there were no taxis to be had. Maybe it was a rainy night, I can't remember.
Mm.
So we all got on a bus.
You did not?
Yeah. Kate Bush and her husband.
Did you get to the restaurant? You did?
We did.
You did. You worked with Paul McCartney. Were you in Abbey Road? Is that what was going on there?
Yes.
What were you doing?
Behaving myself, I hope.
Yeah.
Eating.
Cards and Whey. What were you doing?
Well, the Paul McCartney connection came because Linda wanted some coaching on keyboard. They used to have a Mellotron. The Mellotron tapes loops, and she was playing that on tour with the Wings, and she wanted a bit of coaching just to help her to get some of the parts from the records onto the
sure.
And this was a regular thing for, you know, a few weeks. And I used to drive up to their house in St. John's Wood. Paul had,
which is just around the corner from Abbey Road.
It is, yeah. Well, Carmel had been given an Austin 7, which is about one of the smallest cars you can get. It's about the same size as a Fiat Cinquecento or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
And I used to go over there and get to the gate and press the buzzer and park the Austin 7 beside his purple Rolls Royce.
Lovely.
I loved it. Yeah, and actually, right. Paul loved it too. Anyway, yeah. One day I arrived there and Linda said, "No, you're not working with me today. Paul wants you to do some strings." That's what it was. Yeah.
Really?
So I did two string arrangements for the album.
Wings of the Speed of Sound.
Yeah, you know everything.
I don't know what's on. Only how many dragon after you. I'm a Paul McCartney maniac. I just love Paul McCartney. I just, whatever it is. You know, everybody has a Beatle, and he's my Beatle.
Yeah. But he was always the one who had most awareness of what orchestra could do. You know, he had this great relationship with George Martin.
Yes,
yeah. And it's strange that for somebody who's so musical and so aware of arrangements, that he never succumbed to learning musical notation.
Didn't he do a concert thing? Didn't he have an orchestra?
Yeah. He did an oratorio.
For Liverpool.
Oratorio. Liverpool. Yeah,
that's right.
Kiri Takanawa.
Yes.
But there was a third, apart from the two tracks on Venus Speed of Sound, there was a third thing I did with Paul. For Paul, it was a song for the film Same Time Next Year, and he was pitching for the end title song, and wrote a great song called Same Time Next Year, and he had written the arrangement, he'd worked out the arrangement, but it was all like G octave, F sharp, E,
right.
The names of all the notes, and I thought if ever there was a case for...
Yes.
Notation, you know. Anyway, he says, that, hey, there you are, you go and make it better, or something like
that. And Same Time Next Year, was that Alan Alda, by any chance? Same Time
Next
Year.
Yes, and he didn't get the gig, by the way.
Yeah.
Marvin Hamlisch did the score, and he also wrote the end title song.
Sure.
But it was put out as a B-side, or it was put out as a rarity or something.
Yes, yeah.
But we had 69 strings, and I thought, gosh, in Abbey Road Studio One, that'll fill it up.
Isn't that something?
Abbey Road is like the largest swimming pool inside. There's 69 strings. It's way down at the end.
I know, yeah, it's beautiful.
18 first violins, 16 second violins, 14 violas, 12 cellos, 9 basses.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now, before we conclude, I need to talk to you about Van Morrison. And I'll tell you why. And I brought a bunch of CDs. And I'll tell you why I'm fascinated. You know I love Van Morrison.
I do.
By the way, he's
not the easiest, but he's very comfortable with you. I've heard your interviews with him.
And he
likes what you do and what the respect that you give him and all of that. You know,
and it's a good conversation.
Yeah,
I am a huge fan. I went down the list and I between Avalon Sunset and Back on Top, and the great Poetic Champions Compose. You played on Poetic Champions Compose.
I played organ on a track.
You did, and I'll tell you what it's called. It's called Queen of the Slipstream.
No, I didn't play in that.
Okay. I tell you what, you did play piano on the duets.
I did.
You did play a load on that. You played on lots of those.
Keep Me Singing. We recorded that in Peter Gabriel's studio.
Keep Me Singing is the last album that I would say of Van's that sounds like a Van album, because he's gone into different areas. He's gone back to Skiffle. He's gone back into various things.
But don't
things.
You love that about Van?
Oh, he just goes for it.
So he made a country album, Back on Pay the Devil.
Pay the Devil, yeah.
And he goes off and plays, he does country music festivals. I mean, I love it.
There's no stopping to him. And I love the fact that he had Don Black co-write one of the tracks on this, which I thought was incredible. That's the one. That was the interview. That was when we did that.
Yeah, I certainly did play on that.
That is a beautiful album.
Yeah.
So when we hear that music that you have played on with Van, your relationship was obviously very strong. He trusts you, and you know more than myself would be a great fan. We mentioned how I told you lately that I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to let that take us out. But before we get there is no Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes ignored wrongly in my estimation, is one of the most beautiful pieces of music. 2 minutes long.
It's gorgeous.
And it's gorgeous.
Can I tell you a lovely thing? We did that at the same
session
as... did you get... I'm Tired, Joey Boy.
Yes.
And Have I Told You Lately. Same session.
Yeah.
And when we put the music up for Coney Island, I said to Mick Glossop, the engineer, I said, just put on the light. What you hear is the very first reading by the musicians. And in fact, we didn't even do another one, and we didn't do a safety one. That this is, it's such a tribute to the musicians who, Malcolm Arnold put it, he said, they play by heart from sight.
Wow.
Well, it's a lovely concept, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's it. It was one take.
Back from Downpatrick, stopping off at St. John's Point. Out all day bird watching, and the crack is good. Stopped off at Strangford Lock early in the morning. Drove through Shigley, taking pictures and on to Killalay. Stopping for Sunday papers at the Lacal district, just before Coney Island. Over the hill to our glass in the jam jar. Autumn sunshine, magnificent and all shining through. Stop off at our glass for a couple of jars of mussels and some potted herrings in case we get famished before dinner. On and on, over the hill, and the crack is good. Heading towards Coney Island. Look at the side of your face. As the sunlight comes streaming through the window in the autumn sunshine. And all in all, time going to Coney Island, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great if it was like this all the time?
It is, but it's almost profound. It's such an incredible piece of music because of the imagery that Van has written and sings, obviously, brilliantly. And then when your strings come in, I've always had this thing. I wish it went on for another 5 minutes. It just deserves much longer, but it is very special.
Well, it went on for another 5 minutes. Have we got 5 minutes?
Yes.
Oh, good. there's a track on the Hymns to Silence album. I can't remember which one it was, and. I had a rough mix, we'll say, that was about 7 minutes long or something. And it just it was a repeated 4-bar or 2-bar phrase over and over and over again, you know, and it faded out. So I wrote out the string arrangement, and then I put a repeat sign here, it said repeat ad lib, not, you know. The track was actually almost 11 minutes long, and Van had it just run on and on. And so after a minute, I could see the eyes coming up from the string players, you know, because there's this two-bar phrase over and over again. After 2 minutes, they're in a trance.
It's wonderful. Yeah. But Van does that. He will go into that mode, as you know. Hymns to the Silence, you know. Yeah. Philosopher's Stone, another piece of work that just grabs you. I have to finish on Have I Told You Lately, That I Love You, because it is one of the most famous pieces of music, as you know, like Someone Like You, there's a number of them. But that is probably, if there was ever a calling card for Van, I know people will talk about Moondance and a lot of other things, and because he's done so much, but I think Have I Told You Lately That I Love You is universally loved everywhere. Everybody loves that particular song.
But Van will no longer perform it like that.
Have
you heard him perform
it? Yeah, he runs through it.
He does it like a... Acabilk, Buonasera, Buonasera.
Why does he do that?
I think that it would be a millstone, wouldn't it? You know, the nearest thing he ever had to a big pop hit, I would say.
Yes, I agree.
I think that he just doesn't want to go there, you know.
It's a pity, because when he brought out the books of lyrics,
yes,
the first one, he did a concert and many of the pieces of music he played were like they were in the garden, Hymns to the Silence. And he left them that. But we haven't had that since, which I would adore. If I could sit him down and talk to him, the two of us, and maybe we'll do that. And we'll get a cup of tea and we'll get ourselves sorted. I wish you well with that. Just to finish, will you keep going then?
How long have I got?
Do you feel that you'll keep, you know, if someone says, we need Fiacre's there. Is that, the, you know, in terms of yourself?
Totally. I've just worked with two quite young songwriters who didn't have many pennies, and so we did string trio on one of them, the other string quartet. And I got so much buzz out of... They were elated anyway, which was nice, but I got such a buzz out of doing it. The other thing I did very recently was arrange two lullabies for Sheila Denvir. Do you know Sheila Denvir? Shannon singer. Bog Rain, Dun Shandina, and Shoheen Shoho. Two lullabies with the concert orchestra. And it was lovely. There hadn't been, because of COVID and so forth, there hadn't been much work. And there was a certain... creative muscle was in danger of atrophying.
This
was great. Let's just get it going again.
That's interesting. Quincy Jones, who is considerably older than yourself, Quincy Jones said it's about, and you think about him going back to Frank Sinatra and Count Basie and all these guys. He's done all that he's done, Michael Jackson in the middle, all that stuff he's done himself. And he says it's about finding new music is what keeps it vibrant, keeps him interested, and he's still doing it. So there's a long road ahead of you.
Oh, thank you.
No, I don't know if Carmel will be thrilled with that news, but I certainly will. Fiacre Trent, you're a pleasure, and thank you so much for talking to me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's what you do. like the sun. Take away my sadness. Is my trouble